Welcome to the Bill Barnwell Show. I'm Bill Barnwell, ESPN. We are here. Are we here? On Monday, April 8th, 2019. And it is the annual Bill Barnwell Show tradition to have one show a year about professional wrestling. And that always happens to be based around WrestleMania. Last night and into the morning, sadly, was WrestleMania, a 6.5-7 hour long show. And joining me to break down what happened and perhaps what didn't happen is the wrestling correspondent for the show, who in his day-to-day life is the national baseball writer for the Los Angeles Times. It's Andy McCulloch. Andy, how are you?
I am great, Bill. I'm just still watching the show. I decided to watch it for a fourth time. It's so great. definitely necessary for it to go 7.5 hours, and I'm really glad that that's how I spent my Sunday.
Can I tell you the part that irritated me the most? The most upsetting part of the entire show for me was that they had that dance break before the main event. 6.5 hours in, and they bring out R-Truth. They bring out R-Truth to be like, oh, let's dance for 7 seconds. This is what everyone wants to do. Have you heard about the horror stories people had in terms of getting back from the show?
No, but I could imagine that, like, if you went to that show, I had a friend who was there texting me at probably like midnight, and I think there were still like 3 matches to go, and he was like, this show is too long. Like, I can imagine if you go to WrestleMania at like 4 p.m., you think, like, yeah, I'll be out here by 10. Mm-hmm. So it must have just been utter like hell, I guess, getting out of the Meadowlands at that point.
Yes, you had a rental car. I think you did fine. Unfortunately, if you were getting an Uber, the line appeared to not budge. If you took New Jersey Transit, I think the main event ended 5 minutes before the last match ended, or 5 minutes after the last match ended, so people were sprinting out of the stadium to try and catch the train. There are people who were stuck at Secaucus Junction waiting for the New Jersey Transit train till about 2 in the morning. It sounds like it was a fiasco. And that show was not a fiasco, but it just... I don't understand how any sporting event could possibly be this long. I mean, Andy, you watched the, professionally, you watched the, World Series game that went approximately 8,000 innings earlier this year or last year. I mean, did it feel similar to you?
I mean, that was the worst sporting event I think I've ever covered, and I covered the Mets for 3 years. that was pretty bad. I guess this was fine because I just kind of like muted it at certain points and read a book, which I couldn't really do during the World Series. I kind of had to pay attention to that one professionally. It was just, it's like you're watching, like, did they need to do a 16-minute AJ Styles Randy Orton match? Like, does Randy Orton need that payday that badly? That, like, do they even do paydays anymore? Is that how it works with, like, this, you know what I mean? Like, the whole point of WrestleMania was you try and get everyone on the show so they could get the pay-per-view money, but they're not on pay-per-view anymore. So,
no.
Did they really need, did Kurt Angle need a farewell match? Like, I've said goodbye to Kurt Angle several times, over the past 20 years. Like, I don't think anyone needed to say goodbye to Kurt Angle.
He certainly did not need that farewell match. as a goodbye. I don't think that would satisfy anybody. I mean, I have my issues with the timing of some of these matches and certainly how long they went. But let's just get into it. Let's get started. I don't want this show to also be 7 hours. I'm hoping to get this done relatively modestly. So let's start. The first thing, I did not watch the pre-show. Did you watch the pre-show?
No, I checked in on the Andre the Giant Battle Royal, mm-hmm. at which point, and I should caution the listeners, like, I think I've stopped watching wrestling almost completely.
Mm-hmm.
I'm 31 years old. I just, I can't do this anymore, I don't think. But I was under the impression, I guess, last year that they were pushing Braun Strowman to the moon. And he was on the pre-show, so something must have happened over the winter there. That was all I watched was the pre-show. The guys from Saturday Night Live were on.
Yes,
which, Okay. You know, that is a thing that, you know, wrestling does from time to time. But yeah, that's all I watched in the pre-show was the,
yes,
was the Royal Rumble, or the Battle Royal, excuse me.
Michael Che and Colin Jost were on there. Reasons, yeah. I would say unknown. Some, you know, some real high rent trolling from Colin Jost in wearing a Odell Beckham Browns jersey to Giant Stadium, in a stadium that was mostly filled with tourists. So I don't think it went over quite as well as maybe as he might have hoped.
Just, yeah, he's also from Staten Island, so whatever. Who cares?
Whatever. Who cares is a great way to summate the pre-show. I the first thing I saw. And again, this was like, okay, maybe this is, I should just turn this off. Alexa Bliss comes out, says, I'm going to have a WrestleMania moment when I snap my fingers. And then Hulk Hogan comes out for reasons.
I tweeted this. What does it take to get canceled in the wrestling business? Like, what does it take to just basically say, like, no, you can't, I'm sorry, like, you can't use that sort of language, you know? Like, we can't have that people who talk that way, like, on our program. I don't know what it is. It's clearly not the slurs that Hulk Hogan has used.
I know.
Over the years, so.
I know exactly what it is. The inappropriate language you need to take, you need to say to get banned from the wrestling business is starting a union.
Right. I mean, I just, whatever. You know, like, they bring out Hulk Hogan, and he does, like, the Hulk Hogan. It's just, you know, I'm 31. That's what I felt.
Every time you say I'm 31, I think, oh, I'm 34. That's not, you're not helping me.
Trying to help all of us out there who were poisoned by this because our grandfathers liked watching it when we were kids.
All right, so a match I did want to see then immediately started. Paul Heyman came out, said if he's not, if Brock Lesnar is not on last, which of course the women were on last, which I think is great, he's not hanging around. Brock Lesnar is not hanging around. He's going to go basically fight in the UFC. Right. And then they had Seth Rollins versus Brock Lesnar for one of the many titles. I have the Raw Universal title? Universal title.
It was the red one.
The red one. And then a very strange match in that you have Brock Lesnar, who may be leaving, may not be leaving, and you have Seth Rollins, who you want to sort of promote as a key babyface, and his match is getting dominated by Brock. He then shoved Brock into the ref, gave Brock Lesnar a low blow, hit him with three stomps, and then won. So
yeah,
I mean, it's one thing, I think, if your character is I cheat a lot to win, and I'm sort of like a borderline heel babyface, and not, you know, I just do a lot of CrossFit, which is Seth Rollins' character mostly. And but it appeared to be basically Seth Rollins just by winning via any means necessary.
Yeah, I mean, I guess it protects Brock because they like keeping him. You know, they like having Brock as a monster who can come back at any time. And, you know, I'm sure if he wants a payday in a year, he'll be able to come to get that. I thought it was fine. It was kind of predictable, I guess, that, you know, Brock was going to beat him up and Seth was going to do something. I thought it was actually going to happen before the bell rang. That was how they were going to get around it. But,
yeah.
Yeah, I mean, whatever. It's nice to get the title on Seth and get it off Brock. I was a huge fan of Brock during that sort of 2015 run, but obviously that's grown stale, and like his gimmick is basically being stale, so you know, it'll be interesting to see if they can do something with Seth. He's a really good worker. I think he's a good talker. He just works so much better as a heel than as a baby face, I think, just because of the nature of how his voice sounds, but you know, hopefully he'll be able to do some good stuff with the title.
Would you put Paul Heyman with anybody now?
No, I don't really think it works for anyone except for Brock. They tried it obviously with Cesaro and it didn't work, and so I would bring Heyman back maybe in like 6 months, you know, if you had something fresh for him. But I think, you know, it's that old line, how can I ever get tired of you if you never go away? And so or how can I, whatever it is, you know what I mean, like, how can I ever, you know, be excited to see you if you never go away? And it'd be nice if they kind of just put those guys on ice for a little while and brought them back when they need something fresh.
That makes sense. Speaking of things that are fresh, Randy Orton, a professional wrestler.
On pay-per-view.
Yes, on pay-per-view. Some weird graphics. Oh, Alexa decided to give her say on this match as well. Randy Orton came out to have a match with AJ Styles, a guy who just is impossibly stale. I mean, just a guy who has not changed in a decade. They had some really weird, like, enormous graphics for this match against AJ Styles. They had, like the CGI, like, phenomenal, stretching into the crowd over the entrance ramp. Given that 2 years ago, they were... it was 2 years ago. I don't think it was a year ago. They were projecting images of maggots into the ring.
During the
Randy Orton Bray Wyatt match. I thought those were a huge step forward from WWE.
Yeah, it was good. It was good to see that they've learned how to use three-dimensional sort of ideas. They can't make three-dimensional characters, but they can make three-dimensional graphics. Randy Orton was stale in 2006. It's 2019, but hey, like, honestly, he's had a good look and a finish for 15 years and he keeps getting paid. So, like, more power to him. Like, he stinks. Like, God bless him. Like, I just, you know, it sucks that this is how they're using AJ Styles, who is probably the best worker in the company, to have just kind of a, just generic, like, 3-star Randy Orton match. But, as someone who, plans on spending the rest of his career just kind of being mediocre and getting paid, like, Randy Orton is a sort of beacon for all of us.
Were you happy AJ Styles kicked out of the RKO?
What finish is still protected? I thought it was interesting that that he did, but, like, it's not like anything is protected. I mean, I feel like the first time Styles used the Styles Clash, like, Jericho kicked out.
Yes.
So, like, who cares? You know, it's like none of these things matter. It's better for AJ Styles to win that match than Randy Orton is, but, you know, what are they going to do with AJ Styles, I guess? Maybe he can feud with Kofi. That would be nice, actually.
It'd be nice.
Is Styles a heel? Is he a face? I don't know. What is anyone? You know,
Styles is a face, just in the terms that Randy Orton is. I think there is a subset of the audience that is going to perpetually cheer for Randy Orton, but he is invariably just on sheer unlikability for the reasons you mentioned a heel.
Yeah, I enjoyed Jerry Lawler basically just trying to get over that Cowboy Bob Orton hated his son. That was good. I like that on the commentary.
I hope that Jerry Lawler is just out there just working his own angles in commentary, trying to set stuff up.
It was great. It was really good. He's like, when Randy was a kid, he ran away. And his dad said, can I get that in writing? He's like, what is good? Like, is this like 1997? All right, fine. Jerry's been in business for himself for 40 years.
What are they going to do, fire him? I mean, just bring him back if they fire him? Like, he doesn't care.
Right. What are you going to do, fire me? I'm Jerry Lawler.
Right. They'll just go work indies. Probably make more money doing it that way. All right, well, let's get to the rest of the WrestleMania card in a moment, Andy. But first, I want to talk about our friends at SeatGeek. And granted, not going to lie, we're not super enthralled by how this show went. I did not attend this show. I was in the New York area. I went to a couple of other shows this weekend when it came to wrestling. I went to the NXT show on Friday. Went to the New Japan Super Show on Saturday, as you can see from my Twitter. And you're not going to believe how I bought tickets to both those shows. It is, in fact, with our pals at SeatGeek because I want to get a good deal. I don't know what the market is like. I don't know what an appropriate price to pay for wrestling is. And, well, I went on SeatGeek, and they used their deal score technology to let me know, hey, this is an appropriate price for you and your friends to pay. And we got a great deal, had a great time, could not have gone otherwise. Both those shows sold out, had to go to our friends at SeatGeek, and they set me up. I got a great deal on the tickets prices, got to sit in the section I wanted to sit in, really enjoyed both shows, a great experience, and that could not have happened without SeatGeek. And no matter what you want to buy tickets to, whether it's the budding Major League Baseball season as Andy covers, whether it's the NBA playoffs coming up, the NHL playoffs coming up, whether it's soccer, boxing, MMA, or, and granted, I understand if you don't want to, given what we're talking about here, but if you want to buy tickets to a WWE event in the future, you can certainly do that with our friends at SeatGeek. And best of all, my listeners are going to get $10 off their very first SeatGeek purchase. So if you have not used SeatGeek before, unlike me, who I've used SeatGeek many, many, many times, you can go to the SeatGeek app or go to SeatGeek.com. At checkout, enter in promo code Barnwell, my last name, Barnwell. You're going to get $10 off your first SeatGeek purchase. You can use that for concert tickets, sports, comedy, whatever you want. If you can buy a ticket to it, you can get it at SeatGeek and get $10 off your first purchase using promo code Barnwell. Now back to the show. We had a four-way for the tag team titles, the SmackDown tag titles, the Usos versus Rusev and Shinsuke Nakamura versus Ricochet and Aleister Black versus Sheamus and Cesaro. I like all of these guys. I wish they had just picked two of them. I wish it had just been Usos versus Ricochet and Aleister Black, and they just had that match as opposed to having all of them, because it felt like because they were crunched for time already at this point of the show, so they could have these bloated matches have 25 minutes later on, it kind of felt like, you know, we didn't get the sort of killer match we could have got from any two of these four teams facing one another.
Yeah, I tend to agree with that, and I think when you get teams like this, you'd like it to just sort of be a spot fest, but Rusev and Nakamura really aren't conducive to that. And, you know, really, the spot fest guys would be the Usos, you know, Black and Ricochet, and then Cesaro. So, like, they kind of did a version of that, but they didn't really, they couldn't really get it totally going. But, you know, it was nice. I mean, I think Ricochet is really interesting. Like, he physically is capable of doing things that most other human beings can't. I just wish his matches didn't look like the fight scenes from Mortal Kombat. You know, I wish they actually looked like wrestling matches. And so I'm curious to see if when he gets on the main roster, if they can kind of corral that and have it look like a wrestling match and not like some, you know, Jean-Claude Van Damme movie.
I'm okay with him having matches that look like Jean-Claude Van Damme movies. There are worse things. Randy Orton matches, perhaps.
Yeah, it would. I would actually really like to see a Ricochet Randy Orton match.
Oh no!
It's just Ricochet doing flips and then Orton putting him in a chin lock.
Yes,
it's great.
Yes, 100%.
Hey, by the way, any wrestling fan who complains about Omega not signing with WWE should watch Nakamura in WWE and be glad that Omega is not there.
Do you have a? I think I asked you this last year. I'm going to ask you again this year. Do you have a baseball comp for Shinsuke Nakamura joining WWE?
Maybe like Albert Pujols with the Angels.
That's a little rough.
It'd be more like Mo Vaughn.
Yes, Mo Vaughn with the Angels.
Because I think, you know, that's a bit of it. Like, Nakamura's had a great career, but Pujols is like one of the, you know, a top 10 player of all time. I don't know if Nakamura is that level, but it's just, you know, they got him too late. They got a great year out of him in NXT, and then when he got to the main roster, he just doesn't fit. He just doesn't, you know, they don't really know what to do with him. His work rate has really gone down, and you know, he had a great entrance, and they took that away from him. So yeah, it's just kind of a bummer. You're like, oh yeah, that's Shinsuke Nakamura. Like, oh yeah, he's tagging with Rusev in a four-way. Like, this is definitely why he came over.
I hope he's happy. Like, I hope he's enjoying America. He gets to surf.
He gets to make a lot of money, and he doesn't have to do 60-minute matches with Okada. I guess it's okay.
Yeah, I mean, that part's great, I guess, but it's not for me. It's not very exciting and appealing. They had the Hall of Fame members come out. What did you think of Bret Hart being attacked during the Hall of Fame ceremony?
Yeah, I just assumed it was a work, but I guess it wasn't, you know, like, I just assumed it was like, you know, who knows? I mean, the Hart family is, you know, they've had it rough, man. I mean, that's like, figured that probably wouldn't be the, when I thought about it for 15 seconds, I was like, wait, Bret Hart would not come back to shoot an angle where he gets beat up, like in a Hall of Fame thing. You know what I mean? He doesn't really have time for this nonsense. He is, I may have mentioned this, but Bret Hart is like, just has a level of sort of like sadness about him that I think is kind of unparalleled in the wrestling business in terms of like people of his stature. It's a shame. I mean, I don't know what the heck happened. I hope that, you know, that guy's banned for life, which would really be a great thing for him, that he doesn't have to watch wrestling anymore.
Yeah, apparently, according to the Wrestling Observer newsletter, this guy seemingly was on social media complaining that the women were main eventing the show, and this was his way of protesting, apparently by attacking Bret the Hitman Hart. There's a gap in logic between those two things, but that is apparently what happens.
Yeah, I mean, it's not hard to connect MRA guys with pro wrestling fans.
Yes.
So, that's not a huge logistical leap or logical leap for me.
It's very fair. Speaking of leaps, what a transition. Speaking of leaps, it is Shane McMahon, the best in the world. The ultimate fighter / luchador high flyer, Shane McMahon, wrestling Mike the Miz Mizanin as the babyface. What a strange experience this was. You know that when you see the Miz versus Shane McMahon on the marquee, you're going to get a match with a bunch of smoke and mirrors. And this had them. I mean, you had first and foremost, you had Mike Mizanin's dad coming out to block Shane McMahon from jumping onto his son off of a table, inspiring the first of several WrestleMania memes from the evening. You had Shane McMahon's punches, which were truly awful and truly violent. I would rather get into an actual UFC match with someone than take worked punches from Shane McMahon. And then, oh boy, did Shane McMahon get tired.
Yeah, I mean, I'm a big guy. You know, I know you're a big guy. I mean, have you ever looked as bad as Shane McMahon does always?
I mean, yes, like, I'm sure I have.
Okay,
but like,
I mean, I'd love to see it.
He looks
purple and yes. Just, ugh, God.
It looks so unhealthy in like a way that... I think it's one thing if you're going to be like, okay, I'm a heel, you know, like I'm not a worker. I'm just going to use, you know, shortcuts. I'm going to try and, you know, cheat, and I'm just going to, you know, take it. Because everyone can see that I'm just this really out of shape person, and I'm just going to do whatever I can to take advantage of that and use that in my favor. But Shane, like, is like, yeah, I'm going to jump off stuff. I'm going to do, you know, Van Terminators. I'm going to try and be the super athletic guy. And then also, there's no oxygen left in Giant Stadium because I sucked it all out. And that's you know, you can't really do both those things. It seemed like he also got hurt at some point.
Always does. Like, I think he's in his 50s, isn't
yes,
he?
Yes, he is.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like when they brought him back a few years ago, it made sense as a one-off. It was ridiculous that he actually had to work with The Undertaker, and The Undertaker had to sell his offense. As a one-off, it was like, all right, he's going to jump off the cell, he's going to do something stupid, and then we'll never see him again. And then they just, 3 years later, are like still doing it. And that I don't necessarily understand. But I did love Mr. Miz's hair, his gold necklace. Just his entire vibe. I mean, that, you know, it really did make you wonder what is the difference between Ohio man and Florida man. You know, as you saw Mr. Miz. But yeah, that was fine. You know, it was, I actually thought the whole, the construct of the match was kind of decent, and that it was just like, you know, he was going to get the heat on Miz early, and then Miz was just going to beat the hell out of him for about 10 minutes. Mm-hmm. But what I don't understand is, like, do we really need Shane McMahon kicking out of finishers?
Right.
Like, this, like, is that, like, the way to do it would be a version of kind of the end of one of that, those Gargano Ciampa matches, mm-hmm. where basically, like, you can have Shane win with the superflex when he lands on top of him, but you shouldn't have him kicking out of Miz's finisher at some point. Just mm-hmm. have Miz be so angry that he wants to, you know, destroy the guy that he ends up destroying himself. Like, I don't know why a human being would want this angle to continue, but if you're going to continue the angle, that's a way to do it, I guess. And this way just kind of, like, was kind of the worst of both worlds in a way. And that there's not a definitive conclusion, and then also Miz couldn't be protected.
I don't, you know, I understand if you don't really care about protecting babyface Miz, that's fine, but
who cares?
That's probably fair. Who cares is probably a better way to put it. Just like, why? None of these people should be protected. They could have done a double count out.
I'd like to apologize to all of the listeners for actually going through a monologue about why they should protect the Miz. I really should be institutionalized, I think.
Alongside Shane McMahon, I think it's fair to say. This ended with Shane McMahon. I thought they actually, given that they were going to do a stunt, they ended up doing a pretty safe one, which was a suplex off of a you know, some sort of arbitrarily located I can't think of the right word, just some sort of arbitrarily located surface 9 feet off the ground onto an enormous crash pad.
Big crash pad.
Yeah, which is fine. Like, you know what? That's great. Yeah. Be safe. There's nothing wrong with being unsafe. And Shane happened to fall on top of Miz after the suplex and got the pin. So
yeah, well, let's run it back. Main event at Backlash. Let's go.
Main event at Backlash. Let's go. I mean, like, I just don't... It seems like if you're defending your dad and then you lose, like, that's a pretty bad babyface thing to do.
What a stupid company.
What a stupid company. We're going to get to the rest of this show after the break here in a moment on the Bill Barnwell Show. Back here on the Bill Barnwell Show, I'm Bill Barnwell, joined again by Andy McCullough. We're talking about the WrestleMania. Was it WrestleMania 35? Yes, WrestleMania 35 last night. And oh boy, we have a lot of stuff to get through still. This may be a 7-hour podcast possibly as well. A 4-way for the women's tag team titles. Bayley and Sasha Banks. I'm thinking of Sasha Brown perhaps versus Nia Jackson Tamina versus Natalya and Beth Phoenix versus Billie Kay and Peyton Royce, the Iconics, who ended up winning this match. They stole the pin away and came away with the win. I don't know who I wanted to win this match. I will say the double sharpshooter by Natalya on Bayley and Banks was ambitious. An ambitious double submission attempt.
Yeah. I really don't have much to say about this match other than I wish they would do more with Sasha, and by I say I wish, I can just say that I don't really care.
But it would be nice. Like, if you're going to do something, you might as well.
Yeah, I mean, she's main evented pay-per-views, and she's a good worker.
Is Bayley the single wrestler who would have benefited most from always just staying in NXT and never getting promoted to the main roster?
Yeah, maybe alongside the Revival, I guess. Yes. It's just like sort of being the final boss at NXT. That's probably about right. I think also in a way, though, like sort of... Bayley demonstrates sort of the flaws with NXT, and we've talked about this before, about how just the fans there try so hard to get everyone over that I think it creates a false perception that they are over, or that they're ready to be over. And so you see a lot of guys who aren't totally developed, or maybe just don't have enough of a character, or just don't have enough of a, you know, in-ring arsenal, and they move up to the main roster and they flop, and you're like, yeah, it's because they're, you know, being treated as, you know, like it's every match is being treated like it's Dusty Rhodes, Ric Flair at Starrcade, because these fans are just there talking about, like, you know, like just basically going into business for themselves and like loving every match even though they're not very good. So who can say
is certainly a fair argument. That we had the best match of the show, at least to me. I haven't run it by you yet. I'm assuming that you agree with me in that Daniel Bryan and Kofi Kingston was the match of the night.
Yes, by far. It was really good. Really enjoyed it. It reminded me of why I like wrestling.
Yes. It was the exact story you want to see. You had, and strangely, the person who was on the other side of the story 3 or 4 years ago, you know, you had the bully champion, you had the guy who was, you know, taking advantage of numbers, beating up the sort of, you know, very likable, very underrated babyface in Kofi Kingston. And I mean, I thought it was a great match. You know, I really thought it was just a, you know, Daniel Bryan, shockingly, the guy who was the best wrestler in the world for about a decade, you know, put together an awesome match. I thought that the bump Kofi took on the announce table, they showed two angles of it. The first angle was absolutely terrifying.
Yeah, that was pretty brutal. That was pretty scary, actually.
And then they showed a second angle that was nowhere near as bad. And I was like, oh, you guys could have just kept the first one. That looked like he, you know, destroyed his face. But okay, that's fine. I thought just a, you know, he started working over the ribs after that. A very solid match. Bryan was always going to have the advantage with submissions, naturally. Really nasty stomp spot. And then Kofi, you know, got the advantage, stomped him back. Trouble in Paradise. Got the pin, kicked out of Daniel Bryan's knee. bit of a habit.
Out of the Dragon's knee, yeah.
He kicked out of American Dragon's knee. I mean, just, you know, this is exactly what you know, you wanted as a fan. I feel like this was a, you know, just a great storytelling moment. And I don't know what happens with Kofi. You know, I hope that he can, you know, be this guy for a few more months against other opponents. I'm a little skeptical that they're going to put him in that role just because I think they are innately distrustful of people who are not, you know, 6.5 feet tall, who haven't drawn money in the past. But, I think Kofi, I hate to do this because I'm going to inspire that champ, but Kofi deserves this. I think Kofi showed over the past few months that he deserves a run, with the title.
Yeah. I mean, this is, he is certainly one of the rare guys who actually deserves that chance, I think.
Yes.
You know, so, yeah, it was a really good match, really well done. And I think it kind of, it sort of exemplified the things that are still good about the product. It's like you just have a simple story of like a guy who's sort of been, you know, trying to get over the hump for a long time. He's obviously a fan favorite. He's been, you know, sort of was a, you know, kind of like a mid-card guy for a really long time, partially because he was kind of stuck in this good, productive tag team that had a, you know, that had a limited ceiling, and hopefully they'll give him a run. You know, they'll probably screw it up, but hopefully they'll give him a run. And at the very least, you know, he had a real, it was a great moment, you know, him winning the title with his kids and all that sort of stuff. And, but you know, I mean, Kofi was really good. Brian is so good as a heel, and I hope they kind of keep him in the mix because that character is just is so good. So, yeah, I mean, I would pay to, you know, not, I would, I don't know if I'd ever pay a dime to watch wrestling again, but, I would be curious to see if they could kind of drag that, you know, a feud between those guys out over the summer and maybe get to SummerSlam and, you know, and go from there. But we'll see. I mean, it, you know, at the very least, it's something fresh, something new, and that's commendable.
Yeah, I think absolutely. You know, they need to promote new people. They somehow have this incredible, you know, developmental system and somehow manage to make everyone there seem totally normal and unexciting within weeks of promoting them to the main roster. So,
it's amazing. Yeah. I mean, yeah. It's just like, it's sort of incredible actually how they just like, it's going to be great when like Adam Cole gets to the main roster and is jobbing on 205 Live with
his I was at that show, and that was one of the most incredible things I've ever been to, in terms of, the reactions for that main event match. It was incredible. Also, did you notice that WWE spoiled the outcome of this match with the WWE shop before the match even started? If you searched for New Day, as this match started, you would be redirected to the t-shirt that they showed, after the match was over 25 minutes later.
Oh, well, that's good. That's good. Well, you got to get an advance, you know, advance. I would be curious to know how many people bought those before they actually saw the finish. Those are the people I want to meet. Believe in, you know, just like, if there's one thing I can trust, it's the wrestling business.
I can trust that they're not going to screw me over to sell some merchandise.
Right.
No way. Samoa Joe and Rey Mysterio, I believe, was next. And, I mean, exactly what I wanted, though. Like, I don't want to, given that these other matches lasted so long, I'm so happy that they just ran a 59-second match and Joe choked him out. Like, I know Mysterio was hurt, but so happy. I wish the next three matches had been under 5 minutes.
Yeah, I mean, I wish that for basically the duration of the show. Like, after the Kofi Bryan match, I was like, all right, let's just get to the main event. Let's just get through it. And that was not what happened.
Yes, no, it was not. We got Roman Reigns and Drew McIntyre, and obviously, I mean, you know, Roman Reigns, legitimately impressive to come back from leukemia. And you know, someone who there's always been a very solid worker, you know, someone who I think in there with the right guy is going to have a great match. Drew McIntyre, someone who, you know, showed what he can do in the indies, I think a very solid performer as well. But I mean, this was just a match. Like, you know, it was just a Raw main event. It wasn't like there was anything, you know, I'm going to remember from this match a year from now or 6 months from now or even next week or even honestly as we record this podcast. It was a fine match, but it wasn't, you know, there's no takeaway moment. There's no momentum for Roman coming out of this match as far as I can tell.
No, I mean, I'm curious. It probably would have been better just to keep Roman out of the ring for a little while. But I understand that they want him on the show and all that. He probably wants to be on the show, obviously, if they're missing so much time. So, but it was, yeah, you're right. It was like a pretty generic, you know, big guy match that there's, I don't know if McIntyre is the right guy for him. I think both of those guys work better basing for smaller guys.
Yeah.
And so, you know, that's a dynamic they can create pretty easily, actually, and it surprises me that so often they don't book things like that.
I think if they had just held Roman Reigns off for a month, I guess they wanted to do that Shield reunion, but if they hadn't done that,
yeah.
Instead of having the low blow spot in the Seth match, if you have Roman, you know, come out after being gone for months, he Superman punches Brock, you know, Seth hits the three stomps and wins, that's like an all-time classic moment. And instead we got, you know, two things that were okay.
Yeah, it was, I mean, yeah, I think there's a lot of ways to do it, but I guess, you know, Roman probably very much wanted to work, and, you know, they probably want to get him back in ring shape and, you know, and all that sort of stuff. But it definitely was not a, you know, the sort of triumphant thing that it maybe could have been.
Also not triumphant, Elias and John Cena. Elias, I don't know what they spent like 5 minutes with Elias playing different instruments. And then they brought out the Doctor of Thuganomics, John Cena from 2005, and came out and did some freestyle raps. I guess at least he was self-aware. He criticized his own movies, said they sucked. You know, and then gave him the apparently no longer banned in name alone, FU. to end this very strange segment. This feels like it was a plan B, like they had a different idea and they couldn't pull it off, and so we ended up having John Cena just beat up Elias for no reason.
It seems like this is what you do when The Rock says no.
Yes, or The Undertaker isn't interested, or the campaign.
Yeah, the Taker's like too busy, you know, lifting or something like that, you know, or whatever, riding a motorcycle somewhere with, you know, the Godfather. It was fine. I thought, you know, Cena was like kind of funny, but it was like wrestling funny. It wasn't actually funny. So the crowd was like going crazy, and you were like, are these people just drunk? Like they were, you know, they were responding like it was, you know, like Bernie Mac's first set on Def Comedy Jam. You know, it was like, I ain't scared of you. Like that, they were reacting to that set, as you know, but it was not that.
It was fine.
Is Elias a heel or a face? What is he?
Elias was a heel, and then he turned face, and then kind of secretly, quietly, he turned heel. But
anytime you've got a good gimmick, you need to bring it out every night and do the same thing. Like, that's what they do best, is take something that somehow gets over and then do it every time.
Yes. Run into the ground with nowhere else to take it. I mean, we'll see. Maybe Elias will get super over, and next year he won't be doing the same exact thing, but I am a little skeptical. I will say, if you want to talk about someone reinventing themselves, someone doing something different, Triple H deathmatch guy. I'm super excited to see Triple H just, you know, pulling out pliers and scissors to attack Batista.
I don't
understand. I mean, for all the talk about, hey, we have a very specific style here, we do something very different, we don't work the way, you know, those garbage wrestlers work or other people work. I mean, this was just literally, hey, here's a toolbox full of stuff, and we're going to pull out Batista's nose ring with scissors, and we're going to, you know, put his hand in vice grip pliers and squeeze them. It was just like, and then after that, they had like 5 minutes of that, and then pretty much nothing else. I mean, he kicked out of a pedigree. Triple H kicked out of the Batista bomb. They sort of reenacted that spot where I think it was Batista spinebuster Triple H on the ring steps. They went through a table with the spear. It just wasn't like there was stuff that was happening, but you know, I didn't buy that Triple H was going to retire. So once you put in that step, like, it's not, you know,
he runs the company.
Right. Right. Like, he's not going to, like, go, you know, build a startup. Like, he's still running the company. So I didn't buy that element of it. I think if they just hadn't had that, I think it would have been, there would have been more at stake. And what happened in the end of this match? And I looked up and Ric Flair was, you know, at ringside, and then Triple H won. What happened at the end of this match?
He, like, Flair, like, jumped the guardrail and gave Triple H a hammer and hammer, and Triple H did, like, a Superman punch with the hammer, and then hit a a pedigree. I figured the crowd would be dead for this. I did not expect it to be a death match, though, so that was a little strange. I enjoyed Triple H using the Mad Max Fury Road entrance, kind of catching up on all the hottest movies from 3 years ago.
I was going to say, that's very strange.
It's a very strange company, and then it was great because he was, he's coming out in in the Mad Max car or whatever, but it's just driven by some random guy. And so I was just looking at is that Brutus the Barber Beefcake? No, it's just some guy. It looks like, is that Beetlejuice? Who is that? Is that Michael Keaton as Beetlejuice? So it was, it was not the, not a great match. It went too long. It's just it's weird. I don't know. We're sort of past the point of where I don't know wrestling fans really like cartoonish violence. Mm-hmm. The sort of New Jack, Axel, Ian Rotten thing of stapling people in the head. Mm-hmm. I think we can suspend our disbelief, but we don't like things that are obviously stupid looking and painful, you know, like people at this point, the people who are left, they like wrestling. They don't really like chair shots. They don't really like thumbtacks. They don't like to think about these people being in actual physical pain. And so you're doing these spots where Triple H is just taking pliers to Batista's hand and you're just what is this? That would really hurt.
Yes.
Why would you, why can't you guys just have a wrestling? I don't know. It just sort of, it punctures the fourth wall in a way that makes you feel really stupid for watching this.
Right. Right. Because either you have to assume that Batista's hand is crushed and he's going to, have to go through months of physical therapy after this match, or that it's fake. It's fine that it's fake, but I think having it rubbed in your face like that does not bode well. It just doesn't seem to fit what they want to do. Speaking of things that are fake, then we had Baron Corbin, who Spencer Hall of Every Day Should Be Saturday said looked like a P.F. Chang's manager, beat Olympic gold medalist Kurt Angle in his farewell match.
Yeah, that was great. I remember so many things about this match, and I will definitely think about it beyond this conversation.
I just, who is asking for Baron Corbin to win this match? I mean, is it, couldn't you have just had Kurt Angle just put him in the ankle lock, win in 10 seconds? No one's going to care. It's not going to hurt Baron Corbin's heat, which is non-existent to begin with. I mean, it's just going to be a thing.
Yeah.
It's going to be fine.
I mean, there is that old school thing of you go out on your back, which, I imagine Angle probably wanted to do, but I don't really think that applies in a case like this because he's been more or less retired as a wrestler for a while, and all of his matches are sort of cringeworthy because you're just the human neck shouldn't look like that,
right?
It's just kind of a bummer, the whole thing is a bummer, honestly.
Right. I mean, you're talking about the old school thing is to go out on your back and lose 2 minutes after a match where you had a guy squeezing someone with pliers and using scissors to pull a nose ring out. It's a weird sort of now we're going to do the old school appropriate thing and try to build the territory by having the guy who's going out losing to Corbin.
Yeah, exactly. It's going nowhere.
Going nowhere, I think, is a fair way to put it. We had Finn Balor versus Bobby Lashley. I, at this point, the show had gone on for too long. It was 6.5 hours at this point. This was the second to last match in the show, which I've been trying to figure out what was the second to last match in the show for the previous 5 matches. I forgot all about this match, the Kurt Angle match. I forgot about the Triple H match. After Daniel Bryan, I was like you said, okay, let's get to this main event. I'm good.
And yeah, let's go. Yeah.
When Finn Balor is crawling down the aisle, I'm just like, I don't need, I like Finn Balor a lot. I think he's great. I just don't need this. Just please finish this quickly.
Yeah, I mean, the demon thing, I think I've mentioned this before. I really just like to never see that again. It looks so goofy. Mm-hmm. And he's dynamic enough without it that it just seems silly, and it also seems like if you could do this all the time, why don't you just do it all the time? You know, he's basically like wearing like a, you know, like a Rasta thing on his head, and just kind of like crawling like a goof. And you know, I'm not. It's not a. It's just. It's, it looks silly and campy in a way that isn't necessary because you can do so much with him outside of that that is really good. Like put him in a match with someone who isn't Bobby Lashley. Like that would also be good.
Honestly, if they just put him in a match with Lio Rush, who was there managing, it would have been 10 times better.
Sure. Yeah. Lio Rush. Oh, man. I'd like to watch a Lio Rush Ricochet match. It's just two guys, you know, sort of jumping and not actually wrestling for 45 minutes.
Again, I would watch that 10 times out of 10 versus Triple H and Batista.
Well, that's probably true. Yeah, it's probably better.
Okay, so the main event. Now, Andy, let me ask you a question. You're not a professional wrestling booker. You're a baseball writer. But if you were a pro wrestling booker and you had someone who you've been building up for months as this Steve Austin-level babyface who was being held down, who was white hot, fans love this person. They want to see them get that triumphant moment at WrestleMania. How would you book them to win their big match in the main event of WrestleMania?
Well, first of all, you wouldn't book a triple threat. You would book just Rousey and Becky Lynch, and you'd have them go for 20 to 25 minutes, and you'd have Lynch go over clean with a tap out.
Yes, you would. Or maybe just, with her finish, like with some kind of big move, no?
Sure, a clean finish that was definitive, yes.
Would you rather have her win in a moment where the crowd was like, huh? And Ronda Rousey was in the ring actively complaining about the finish as a preferable for you?
Yeah, I mean, that seemed like it was really the best of both worlds. That seemed like the right way to do it is just sort of, you know, have it look weird, have it look very obvious that her shoulders came off the mat, and then have your announcers talking afterwards like, well, this is a controversial way for WrestleMania to end, but this is how it's ending.
In WWE, you know, to my knowledge, the referees are instructed to count regardless of what happens. You know, if someone's shoulders are down and they don't get their shoulders up, well, that's their problem. You're supposed to count to three like it's a shoot. I would love it so much if that had been the main event of WrestleMania and a ref just counted to three when he was supposed to count to 2.5. I don't think that's what happened, but no. I would love it for that to be true.
That would be great. That would be, that would basically be the ultimate sort of, you know, break through the fourth wall moment in which, like, you just don't know. Like, you really have to ponder your existence at that point. But, I don't know. It's just, you're watching it, and I saw the two count, and I go, oh my God, this is what they're doing. And then at three, you're just like, ugh.
So bad, so
stupid,
and it sucks. So like it doesn't do the people in this match any justice. They work their ass off. I mean, this was a legitimately good match until this point. I mean, you know, I watched the New Japan three way that was like a typical three way. The junior title match that was just like 9 minutes of people doing flips and crazy moves, and that's great. And that's a totally fun match. And this was that match with submissions up to this point. I mean,
it was good.
Everyone fighting for submissions, some cool stuff. The ring post figure four from Charlotte. I will say the bump Ronda took going out of the ring. Mm-hmm. I screamed out loud at 12:30 in the morning Eastern time in my apartment. I was genuinely terrified. She couldn't protect herself. That was the scariest bump I've seen in a long, long time.
Yeah, that was not good. That was not good. And to put your sort of health at risk for a finish like that is like, and you know what? Like, look, WWE was trying to make a point. This was the first ever, you know, WrestleMania that had been main evented by the women. And, you know, I think Becky is probably the biggest star in the company right now. Mm-hmm. You know, so it made sense. And, like, look, if you're going to, you know, make a big deal out of this and you're going to try and get some mainstream attention, like, have a clean finish that you can show, you know, on SportsCenter, that you can show on, you know, whatever, on, you know, mainstream sort of, you know, shows that basically says, like, hey, this is our product. This is what we're about. And instead, it's just like this garbage ending where you're like, why did you do this. This is like something that you do at you know, at Backlash or like mm-hmm. Judgment Day, or, you know what I mean? Like, this is an in your house finish for what should have been a historic, you know, moment. And it's just like, you know, it really does make you wonder, why do I watch this stuff?
Well, unfortunately, Andy, you have no choice. You are stuck with me.
It's true.
For,
I love it.
The terms of a quote unquote multi-year contract extension. Until then, if people want to read things that you do that are not wrestling-related, where can they do that?
You can do it in the pages of the Los Angeles Times at latimes.com, and then you can follow me on Twitter at McCullough Times.
McCullough Times. What a great time it is to talk about professional wrestling every year. I can only imagine what will happen next year. Will you watch any wrestling between now and the 2020 edition of this podcast?
Yeah, I mean, I generally watch the Royal Rumble. I'll probably watch the main event of SummerSlam. If I'm just sitting around, and I like having the network, because if I want to watch, you know, the Royal Rumble from 1996, I can do that at any moment. So that happens enough where I'll catch some, but like, it's just, you know, it's hard. They really do make it hard on fans to want to come back, you know, because they provide so much dissatisfaction on a regular basis.
What a banner moment for the World Wrestling Entertainment Company. Andy McCullough, thank you so much for doing your annual duty and hopping on the Bill Barnwell Show to talk about pro wrestling.
Yeah, thanks, man. That was fun.
All right. Thanks so much to Andy McCullough for hopping on the show today and talking about WrestleMania. And also, by the way, guys, please, please check out the Mina Kimes Show. Of course, a frequent contributor to this very podcast, and, you know, this great work. This week on her show, she's doing a mock draft with ESPN's Joel Anderson, plus a conversation with Washington Husky safety Taylor Rapp, who is Chinese American and expected to go in the first couple rounds of the NFL draft. Strongly advise you check that out. And we have another show coming for you later this week, a two-show week after no show last week. So thanks so much for listening, and more on the way.